Hi, everyone. I'm Sandy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Sandy.
My sobriety date is December 17th, 2016. My home group is in Gainesville, Florida, and I'm very grateful to have a sponsor who has helped me stay sober. And I'm very grateful to be here today. If you were to ask me 20 years ago if I would be standing in a room with my filling in for my father, who couldn't be the speaker tonight, I would have never guessed that. I always thought the gene had skipped me and that my brother had gotten the gene, but that's not the case, and that's why I'm here today. I'd like to start a little bit with my childhood. I grew up as a very happy child. I made friends very easily. I was really active in sports and clubs and things like that. And I was very extroverted. So alcohol wasn't something I needed to get by with in life. I had a brother and two sisters. My dad worked for DuPont, and my mom was a stay-at-home mom, and she took care of the kids. And while that seems like kind of a nice, happy family, and it was, there was an elephant in the room, so to speak. my dad would drink just on the weekends. And he would start on Friday nights, and then he wouldn't drink on Sundays. And I always knew when the holidays were, when the three-day weekends were, because then my dad was drinking on Sunday. And that was an indicator to me that it was a three-day weekend. My dad was, we liked when he drank. He was nice. He played with us. We had a lot of fun with him. So it was never anything that really bothered us. I remember as a kid making his drinks. He drank Jack Daniels, and I remember even as a kid I would try to make them weak because I just didn't want him to get too drunk on those drinks. And my mom would drink socially, and a lot of the neighbors would come over and they would have parties and things like that, and my mom drinking did really bother me growing up. And I remember very clearly to this day, I was in my room and I was upset that my mom was drinking, and this was, I was very young, so I wrote a note to my grandparents, and my grandparents were dry, and they lived in Virginia, and I don't know why I wrote it, but I wrote them this note, and I explained that my mom and dad drank and that I didn't like it, and that those were my feelings. And I wrote that note and I tucked it in, folded it up, and I stuck it in a drawer, and then I forgot about it. And I don't know, Dad, do you remember the story? So sometime later, my dad comes home from work and calls me into his room, and he had the piece of paper that I had forgotten about folded up, and I, you know, when that happens to you, and I looked at it, and I was like, oh my goodness, I didn't intend for anybody to ever see that. And he had said that that it really hurt my mom reading that. And the next day he had come home and called me up in his room, and he had a diary for me with a little key, and he said if I'm upset about things that I should write it in this diary. And and he also bought me this, I collected pigs, and because we had so many siblings, you know, it was very rare to get a gift just from my father. And he bought me this pig chime that I still have today. And at the time, I just really didn't understand what was going on. But now, looking back, I see that that was just kind of a way, I don't know, of him to to recognize that my feelings matter. And nobody stopped drinking, and it didn't change the world. But in my little life, I will always remember that story. Thinking back to the first time I ever drank, I think I was probably around 10. We had friends that had trailers next to each other at the beach. And there was this one trailer that I'll always remember. It had a keg built in to the unit so that at any time people could drink beer. And I was sitting at the table, and all the adults were drinking, and somebody said, "Do you want to try this beer?" And I said, "Yes," and I tried it. And I didn't like it. I hated it. But I drank more of it, and more enough to the point where I got very, very sick, threw up everywhere, and did not learn from that lesson early on. So that was my first experience with alcohol. My alcohol runs in my family pretty heavily. So alcohol runs on both sides of my family, not just my dad, but my granddad, my grandparent, my grandmom, aunt, uncle. My brother's suffering from addiction right now, and my nephew has suffered as well. And as I said, I always thought that it had skipped me. So I was able to get by in life up to my mid, maybe even late 30s, drinking socially, drinking for fun, organizing wine tastings at the house, and I could have it or I could not have it, and it really never really bothered me, but I liked it. I enjoyed having parties and drinking. And so something happened to me in my late 30s, and that is that I started to have severe hangovers. And the hangovers just, were ones where you woke up and you just felt bad all day long. So the non-alcoholic, how to avoid a hangover, would just not drink. But the alcoholic would find ways to avoid these alcoholics while still drinking. So I did everything, I read bananas and Gatorade would help, and at one point I thought if I could just drink like the top shelf, the good quality liquor, that it wouldn't give me such a bad hangover. And then I went through a period where I thought, well, if I'll just stay away from the alcohol, you know, if I just drank wine, then I wouldn't have these bad hangovers. I thought maybe if I just drank beer. I tried everything, and I still was having these bad hangovers. And then I tried something, and this was one of the things that I think kind of was the switch where my alcoholism became active. I discovered that if you drink when you're hungover, then you get over that hangover, and you defer it to the next day. The problem with that, as you know, is that is day after day after day after day, and that's actually what started happening to me. I started to make up excuses for everything. So one time that I remember really clearly, I had planned this huge party for one of my husband's graduate students, and I invited my whole lab, my husband's whole lab, cleaned the whole house, cooked all the stuff, and really spent a long time getting ready for this. And so before the party started, I did what any normal alcoholic would do, is I had a few drinks. I had my own pre-party before my party, and suddenly, during the middle of the party, I got this dizziness feeling, and that was the end of it. I went upstairs, I threw up, and I missed my own party. I mean, I didn't even get to say goodbye to my own guests. But I made up an excuse to myself because I had a cold, and I was on cold medicine, so I got sick because of cold medicine, so I told my husband. having your child stare up at you when you're wrapped around a toilet throwing up because you drank too much wasn't one of my proudest moments for sure. And I wish I could say that was the only time that happened, but it wasn't. Another time, some good friends of ours invited us to their house, and they had gone through a lot of trouble to cook us a dinner. And they decided they were going to serve these things called apple teenies, which I thought were grand. And I don't remember how many apple teenies I drank. Same thing happened. I started to get dizzy. I told my husband, we have to go. And we left before dinner was even served. And so it got to the point where my husband said he didn't want to go out with me anymore. And publicly, because it embarrassed him. Well, I had a good excuse for that time. I was on an empty stomach, you see. I hadn't eaten all day. And so that's what I told myself and everyone else. So soon after that, or really concurrently with that, my health started to decline in certain areas. The first thing was sleep. I started not being able to sleep, regardless of how much alcohol I drank. It would get me to sleep, and then I would wake up and couldn't sleep the rest of the night. So I went to the doctor, and of course, when you fill out those forms, you never say how much you drink. You just say occasional. And he prescribed this miracle thing for me at the time called Ambien. And I started taking this Ambien, and I just had wonderful sleep, so the problem was solved about my sleep problem. So I continued to drink and took Ambien, and that worked for a while. Then I started feeling these heart palpitations, and I went to the doctor, same doctor, and he said, well, you have high blood pressure. And I said, well, all right, give me a prescription. And he wrote out the prescription, and that took care of my blood pressure problem, which we all know is induced by alcohol. And finally, I started feeling this anxiety all the time. It was just like my heart was racing. And I thought there was something wrong with me. I went to a heart specialist. He took an EKG and all this self-monitoring. And I went back to get the results, sure that something seriously was wrong with me. And he said, well, you have anxiety. And I said, all right, well, you know, give me a prescription for something to take for my anxiety. So at this point, I was on sleeping medicine to help me sleep, blood pressure medicine to help my blood pressure, and anxiety medicine to help my anxiety. All of this was induced from alcohol. And this just really reveals the insanity that that I was going through, and the denial that I was going through, that I in fact was an alcoholic. The turning point really was when I stopped caring really what I drank. I would go to the liquor store, and I would get something. It didn't matter what it was or how much it cost it. I just really stopped. I wasn't drinking for the social aspect. I was drinking for the effect that alcohol had to help ease my my mind. And on the weekends, I started to drink at any time. I mean, if I had a hangover, I would wake up in the morning and I would drink, and that would help get me through the afternoon. And then I would drink, and that would help get me through the evening. And I would start drinking before parties, because it would look bad if I had, you know, 3 glasses of wine at a party. So it would be much better to drink, you know, at least 3 before the party, and then only have 1 or 2 or maybe 3 at the party. And everybody thought I was just a lightweight. Because I was, you know, you could tell that I was intoxicated at these parties, but, and my husband thought I was a lightweight, but when he became concerned that my drinking was turning in a bad direction, I started hiding it. And so no one really knew for quite some period of time the extent of my drinking. I wanted to quit. I thought, you know, I'm a capable human being. I can, if I put my mind to something, I can achieve it. And I tried to quit many, many times. I knew that that it ran in my family. I knew that that I was an alcoholic and that I would have the motivation and the capability to quit. And I couldn't. I tried many, many, many times, and I could not quit without AA. I remember clearly thinking that if I could just get pregnant, then I know I wouldn't drink carrying a child for 9 months, and maybe not drinking for those 9 months, then I would just never drink again. Maybe that would fix me. And so that those are all the things that we rationalize in our minds, because really, you know, I was very sick and didn't realize it. One night, I remember going up to where my husband was, and I asked him if he could watch our daughter. And I said that I think I would. I was just sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I asked him. I told him that I thought that it would that I would like to go to an AA meeting. And even though my dad's been in AA for 33 years, I really didn't know what I knew AA existed, but that's all I really knew. I didn't have any, you know, close friends or anything like that in it. And my dad didn't live in town. So all of this I was able to hide very well from my family because I lived many states away. So my husband, and what he said was very important to me because if he had said, I think you need to go to AA, I wouldn't have gone. I would have just resisted it more because I'm stubborn and I think I have to be in control, and that's one of my character defects is control. But he didn't say that. He said, I'd be glad to watch her, and I think that that's a really good idea. And so I looked up the meetings, and there was actually a meeting that met every single day of the week except one day at 6 o'clock, so there was no excuse about not being able to go to work and get to a meeting. And it was on the outskirts of my neighborhood. I could literally walk there if I wanted to. And as God worked it out, for that very first meeting, November 28th, 2013, it was a speaker meeting, and the rooms were kind of dim, and I didn't really have to talk. We weren't going over the big book or anything like that, and it was easy for me to slide in. And I didn't know what to do. I knew to introduce myself as an alcoholic, and that was pretty much about it. And everybody was so kind and gracious to me. I had drank an entire bottle of wine before I went to this AA meeting, you know, to get up the courage to go, I told myself. And so this meeting was wonderful. The speaker was wonderful. I got all these phone numbers. I looked at these wonderful steps, and I thought, while I was there, I'm going to just bang out those first six in a matter of weeks, and I'm going to do this. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to attack this situation like I do with everything else in life, and I'm going to fix it. So after the meeting, one of the kind ladies came up to me, Faith was her name, and she said, well, do you need a ride home? And I said, well, no, I don't need a ride home. I live right down the street. And I said, why? And she said, because we can smell alcohol on you. And so, you know, even though you think that nobody knows, everybody really knows and probably had known for quite some time. So I started going to that meeting, and I had a sponsor, and she was wonderful, and we still stay in touch today, and that lasted for probably 6 months or so, and then I just started drinking again. I don't even have an excuse for it. I couldn't imagine my life never drinking ever again. I just didn't see it ever happening, and I felt like I had a good handle on things now. And so, but I didn't want to disappoint my sponsor. I'm not somebody to disappoint anybody, and that's part of my problem. And so I didn't tell her. And I kept going to AA meetings, and I kept, talking to my sponsor about the program, and really I was just completely being untruthful to myself and untruthful to my AA friends, and especially my sponsor. And that's not a great feeling to know that you're fake, and I was. So. But at least I had the tools, you know. I felt like I have them in my bag and I can use them when I need them. And my dad never knew any of this. He never knew any of this. So in December 2015, I was promoted at work, and I moved my family, and we went through selling a house, adjusting to new careers. It really was the setting for the perfect storm. You can imagine the tremendous amount of stress if anybody has ever moved before, coupled with I still had my alcoholism was still active. I was just hiding it. And I essentially was drinking more than I'd ever drank before. I would arrange birthday parties for my daughter, and I would drink during the birthday parties for no reason, just because I wanted to. I would drink sometimes before church. I would drink during school plays. If I felt like drinking, or if I had a hangover and I felt bad, I would drink. There was really no stopping me. So during all of this time, we received the call that our second daughter, that there was a match for us, and we were to adopt our second daughter from China. And so we went over to China to get her, and I forgot all this medication that was helping keep me going. And in China, there was no alcohol with the group that we were at. It was a Christian group, and we were all together, and there was no transportation for any of us. And so I started shaking, and I thought it was because I was nervous about this daughter that I was about to adopt. And now I know I was shaking because I was detoxing in China, picking up my second daughter. And so we made it back with the second beautiful daughter, and that's when my sponsor started encouraging me to, who still didn't know I had started drinking, said, kept saying, "Have you found a new meeting in Gainesville?" And so I went to the first meeting in Gainesville, and I found one that was 12:15, so I could go during my lunch break. And during that meeting, I looked around very nervous to see who I was going to know. And sure enough, there, right on the other side of the room, and it was a circle, was somebody in very high administration at the university. And so I stayed for that meeting, but I left before he could see me. And but the next day I emailed him, and I didn't know, I knew who he was certainly, but I didn't know what kind of person he was. I emailed him and I said that I had something to, I asked him if he had a minute. And this is somebody that you normally wouldn't email. You would email his secretary. I mean, trying to get into something, to meet with somebody like this would be difficult to do. And right away he emailed me back and said, I'd be glad to, I'll come to your office that same day. So he came, and we sat down on the picnic table, and I said to him that, I don't know if I went to a meeting yesterday and I noticed you were there, and I don't know if you saw me or not. And he said no. And I said, well, it was a 12:15 meeting at the Presbyterian Church. And then he knew what I was talking about. And I said, I'm struggling, and I'm wondering if you will share your story with me. And he did. And he actually, during his high-paced career, had went to the Florida Recovery Center, which in Gainesville, it's affiliated with the university, and it's one of the top recovery centers. As God would have laid this out for me, right, literally in our backyard, and he had stayed there for 3 months, so he was had a lot to share with me about that. And so so I decided that really I was AA wasn't just AA wasn't going to be enough to just get me sober. It just I just needed accountability, I felt like. And so I enrolled myself in an intensive outpatient program. And so it was 4 days a week, and it was for 4 hours. And this way I could still take care of my children and things around the house. So I needed to meet with the senior vice president to get leave to be able to do this. And that wasn't a conversation I was really looking forward to, because he had just moved mountains to get me here in this new position. And so I just kind of basically said that I think I have a problem with alcohol, and I want to get help. And he said to me, and this is, again, this is God laying, God's hands were in this whole process. He said, well, my father was an alcoholic, and it destroyed our family. So he was very sympathetic, and so the university gave me 3 months of family medical leave in order to get my life together and concentrate 100% on sobriety. And so that was a 3-month program, but I still thought that I was in control of everything. So after about 6 weeks, I made it through steps 1 through 4, which was the requirement to graduate from the program, and I thought I was ready to get back out. And my doctor, who was an addiction psychiatrist, wouldn't release me from the program, even though it was a voluntary program. And he said, you need 3 months. And I didn't understand it at the time, because I thought, you know, I'm not drinking, I'm better, but I did need that 3 months, and I'm grateful for them, you know, making me not go to work for that time. When I first had my first meeting with this addiction psychiatrist, and I gave him the list of all the medicines I was on, it's the first thing that he did. He said, he explained to me that Ambien and Xanax and, you know, everything else for anxiety triggers the same part of the brain that alcohol does. So even though I thought I was doing better, just by simply not drinking, I can't take those drugs also, or it's triggering the same thing that is telling my brain to want more. And so now I'm completely off everything, including the blood pressure medicine, the sleep medicine, and the anxiety medicine, and alcohol. And so my story, I'd like to say that my story ends there, and that was enough for me, but it wasn't. And so on a morning, probably 9 months after I started that program, I woke up in the morning and I found two empty bottles of wine on the dining room table, with a note from my husband that who had found them, and saying that, you know, this is the last straw, and that that, you know, he can't live like this, and he was going to leave me. So I went back to the doctor, and because I was having cravings, and he put me on a certain type of medicine that helps the cravings, and ever since then, I'm happy to say that I haven't had a drink, and I have been relieved of the cravings of alcohol. So today, 18 months later, I have learned to put AA as the center of my life. I schedule my work responsibility around making sure that I go to meetings. I go to at least 3 meetings a week. I have a women's meeting that I go to. At the Florida Recovery Program, there's an aftercare meeting that meets once a week, that we meet with the same counselors that helped us get sober. And then there's a professionals meeting there as well, where it's people from all over the world that have come to this place to get sober, doctors and lawyers and pharmacists and nurses and academics, all with the same problem of alcohol. I have an amazing sponsor, and she has helped me get through this. And every single day, I thank God for being sober, and every single day I pray to God to help keep me sober. Not too long ago, I was driving with my daughter in the car, and the car in front of us was swerving a little bit. And I said, well, the person in front of us is probably either drinking or texting. And she said to me, and this is my 11-year-old daughter, and she said to me, well, Mom, there's two things in life I'm never going to do. And I said, what's that? And she said, I'm always going to believe in God, and I'm never going to drink. And so even though I thought I was hiding all of this from an 11-year-old, it shows that my alcoholism really affected people in ways that I didn't even realize. And after that, I thought to myself, you know, how wonderful it is for these kids to have a mom that's sober, for my husband to have a wife that's sober, for me to have my life back with the bondage that I had from alcohol. Recently, I went to my visited my therapist, she said, she asked me how often I think about alcoholism, and it took me a while to come up with the answer for that, it's not like I obsess about it today, like, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm going to drink, but it's such a core to my being, to who I am. I believe that I relate alcoholism almost to like a cancer that is in remission, and I feel that it's lurking. It's always lurking kind of around the corner, and if I don't keep my guard up, if I don't keep going to meetings and doing service and making sure that I don't put myself in situations that are triggers for a relapse, then that, you know, that will be my fate. And so I've learned just in the small amount of time I've been in the program that alcoholism either beats you or you beat it. And some of my friends that I went to recovery with, it beat. And so it's something that I'm very, very cognizant of, very grateful to be in sobriety. And, you know, we all have a story of how we got here. And my story, I certainly wish I could have gone into those rooms in November 2013, and that would have been my story. But for me, it took many, many tries and perseverance, but I'm here today. And I know that the disease doesn't discriminate amongst us. And we're all in this together, one day at a time. And I'm grateful to everyone in my life that's helped me be where I am today. Thank you.